The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.
This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold 'em.
The number one country song in America for more than 5 weeks is Texas Hold'em by Beyoncé. It's from her new album of country songs, and accompanying her on banjo and viola is Rhiannon Giddens, who's been thinking for a long time about the black roots of country music. Giddens, who I just saw on stage at the Beacon Theater here in New York, became a star in the Americana world, working first with the Carolina Chocolate Drops and then as a solo artist.
Ruby, honey, are you mad at your man?
But Giddens is not a fan of genre, the categories we love to stuff music into. She's incredibly expansive. All in all, she's received Grammy Awards, a MacArthur Fellowship, and last year, Giddens shared a Pulitzer Prize for the opera called Omar. We spoke a few years back when her album There Is No Other had just come out. Her collaborator, Francesco Turisi, joined us as well on percussion and accordion. And they started off with the folk song called Wayfaring Stranger.
Can I have your C? Isn't "and the banjo tuned to the accordion" the beginning of a joke of some sort?
Rhiannon, the banjo is at the heart of your work, and there's a whole tradition that you help bring to our attention, bring back to our attention. And I think if you had asked almost anyone about the banjo, anyone who wasn't an expert or a musicologist, they would have said that the banjo is something played by white people, hillbillies, to use the old term. What were we missing there?
Well, the string band, and the black string band in particular, it really is at the heart of so many. Here we go with genres again, the genres of American music. And it was a widespread phenomenon, you know, that goes back to the time of slavery when black people were seen as natural musicians. They were encouraged to pick up instruments and then play for white people's dances and frolics and parties. And so you have the combination of, you know, native rhythms and modes from West Africa, from all over where people were coming from, and instruments that were coming over, like the banjo, which grew out of West African lute type instruments. I mean,
how much of this do we have recorded?
It's huge. Not any. That's the problem.
So how are you excavating the music in a way?
With dots.
You know, and does with the sheet music. That must give you a very wide berth on how to play it.
Well, the thing is like there's a lot of scholarship that's been done on these early banjo tutors. They were very, very clear on how to play this instrument. And
you keep saying this instrument. We have one on the floor here.
Sorry,
can you describe what this is? Because it's obviously not the kind of thing that you'd see Earl Scruggs play or.
Yeah, the banjo that I have is a replica of, well, it's kind of a composite of some banjos from the late 1850s. It's a wooden banjo. See, the early minstrel style banjos were all fretless. People are always surprised by this because it's fretless and they were gut string. And that's because they were that one step removed from the homemade gourd instruments that black folk would have been making on plantations or wherever. And that was the banjo first. And so they were all be playing these kind of instruments, which are wooden hoop, wooden fretboard, fretless, and it's just a deeper, more resonant sort of round, warm sound.
Renan, you went to Oberlin. You studied. You had formal training there.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of opera. Opera.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become you? How did you kind of create yourself and your sense of direction and where you would go in music coming out of a place like Oberlin where you had had this formal training? Did you think you were going to be singing Les Somnambula or being an opera singer?
We all do coming out of conservatory.
Right.
We're going to be the next big soprano, you know?
What happened?
I discovered folk music and I discovered the banjo. And I also, I'm very interested in doing something that is A, of service, and B, that not everybody else is doing. So I was like, gosh, there's like a million sopranos in the world who can sing as good or much better than I can, who can do these things and want to devote their life to opera, where I'm seeing this other thing and I'm like, this is something I think I can make a difference in, you know? And it touches me and it speaks to me. And so it for me, it goes to show that you have to find the thing that you are meant to do, you know, and you don't know what it is always, but if you follow the thing that's speaking to you, you just don't know where it's going to lead you.
Well,
you know?
I hate to pound on this notion of categories, but what you just sang, is that classical music in a sense?
No. I mean, but then what, I mean...
That's what I mean.
You know, what is classical music, you know? We do on the album two arias, you know, but we do them in vernacular voice and with a sort of improv accompaniment. And it's like, they live in a different realm and they touch people in a different way, but they're, you know, does it still mean that they're not an aria anymore? I mean, that's kind of also the point of the record is, you know, who cares what the, and it, this is not just smashing stuff together. You're layering things on top of each other and finding where the peaks peak because there's all of these similarities between all of these different things. And
right.
And it leads us to, you know, what music is doing for us as humanity. You know, because somebody was saying, well, you know, our diversity is also our strength. You're saying that we're all the same. I'm like, well, in our differences, we're the same.
Yeah.
That's the point, is that, you know, we express ourselves in different ways, but it's all coming back to these universal truths as humans. And the more that we can reject that idea that you are over there and you sound different to me, so that we're different people, and embrace that actually what I do in my culture and what you do in your culture is coming from the same heart, and therefore they should be able to work together. You know, that's more of what we're trying to say.
How does that relate to the next song that I think you're going to do? And you're going to have to help me with the pronunciation to get it exactly right.
Yes.
Pizzica di San Vito.
That's pretty good.
And means?
Pizzica is a type of dance from Puglia, which is
in southern
Puglian
Italy
region, you know. So it's a type of tarantella, which is a very lively, I'm sure you're all familiar with the idea of that. But the particular thing about this music that a lot of people don't know about is that it was music to cure the bite of a spider. And it was, no, this is a very serious thing, actually. The idea with the pizzica is that you got bitten. They believed in the bite of the spider, tarantula, that's why it's called tarantella. And you would fall into a state of depression. And the only way to get rid of this was trance dance, which could go on sometimes for weeks. You know, the musicians would come to your house.
So it's pre-antibiotics.
Definitely pre-antibiotic. Mind you, this was the last time observed in its full power in the 1960s. 1960s was still happening in Puglia.
Incredible. How is that tuned? How is it tuned?
C, well, right now it's in modal. But I have like three different tunings I use for.
Non c'è da venire, non c'è da venire, non c'è da venire, sono venuto. Solis spirito, solis spirito, solis spirito, ma non ho chiamato. A quelli molto vecchi ti venivo, molto vecchi ti chiamavi dalla mano si ne va. A quelli molto vecchi ti venivo, molto vecchi ti chiamavi dalla mano si ne va. Ti li capelli tutto innamorato, li becco ti volà, li becco ti volà, li becco ti volà, dallo vento. Occhi co, te ci perdi l'occhi, ci dici male nuestro scatallo cuori. Occhi co, te ci perdi l'occhi, ci dici male nuestro scatallo cuori.
Amazing. I'm talking with Rhiannon Giddens, and we'll continue in a moment.
WNYC Studios is supported by Wondery. 50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery comes The Competition. Host Shima Oliai was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now she's returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks with 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, it's David Remnick. As the 2024 election draws near, it's more important than ever to understand exactly what's happening in American politics. The New Yorker offers definitive reporting and analysis by some of the best writers and political thinkers watching the campaign. Commentators and reporters, including Susan Glasser, Jane Mayer, Jelani Cobb, Masha Gessen, Evan Osnos, Ben Wallace Wells, and many more are providing incisive analysis that you don't want to miss. Subscribers get unlimited access to all of it. And we're offering a deal just for podcast listeners, 15% off a yearly digital subscription. Visit newyorker.com and use the code POD15. That's POD15 for 15% off a digital subscription to The New Yorker.
Right.
do you think of as your audience for music like this? Or do you not think of it? Is it not worth thinking about?
I mean, you just can't. You can't think about audiences. You know, you just, I mean, that's...
Who do you see in the seats?
Well, you know, it depends on who knows about it. I mean, this is the sort of push me pull you of being a professional musician, is that if they don't hear about it, they're not going to come. You know, like, I mean, part of my mission has been trying to get the music that I play to more of the Black community, for example, which is what people always ask me. So why are there only white people at your shows? Number one, there aren't only white people at my shows. There are always people of color who come. It's just a very small percentage of the overall whole. And the other thing is that the gatekeepers of like Black culture are not interested and what I'm doing, you know. And this is a complaint I've heard from many, many people of color who do music that's not considered Black. That's not, you know,
what does that mean? What is considered Black now, and who are the gatekeepers that we're talking about?
Like, you know, like hip-hop, R&B, blues, you know, well, blues, I mean, people know it's Black, but like, you know, and there's Black people who play it, but it's become
a largely white audience.
You know, white audience and white players, yeah. You know, as well. And jazz is one of those, it's kind of like, you know, in that kind of halfway house world, you know, and then opera. You know, there's like been, you know, there's been Black people singing opera and doing writing classical music forever, you know, and it's like we're seen as sort of, you know, interlopers, and so it's very hard. I've talked to other people who have the same thing. I mean, I was talking to Tavis Smiley. I was on his show because Freedom Highway, I started that tour at Sing Sing Prison, and it was the largest Black audience I've ever had, and that just like broke me in several pieces.
What was that like? Tell me about that concert.
I mean, it was very intense, you know, to get like a cultural response that I'm not used to. Because
this is at Sing Sing Prison in Austin, New York,
just
north of the city.
With the Carnegie Fountain, you know, the Carnegie Hall does this amazing program going in. And we worked with one of the prisoners on one of his songs about domestic violence. I mean, it was really intense. They were beautiful. And you just kind of...
So it wasn't just a performance. You were there for a while.
We did work. Yeah, we were there the whole day, you know. Mm-hmm. And you just look out that sea of brown faces and you think about what does that mean for, you know, when you talk about the incarceration of Black men and men of color and, you know, how broken the system is. But then from a purely performance point of view, I was just like... The way that they responded to the music was different than when I have, you know, white.
How so?
I mean, it's kind of hard to explain, like, just the energy that was given back. And I didn't know the personal stories of any of them, didn't want to know, because it's just like, that wasn't the purpose of the visit, you know?
What did you play for them?
We played a full concert. I brought my full band, and we played a lot of stuff from Freedom Highway. And so it's just like I feel very strongly, like I'm starting to work with my nephew, who's a 21-year-old rapper who plays the banjo, right?
I taught him. That's an unusual combination.
It is an unusual combination. And he, you know, he's a heavy rapper. Like this is, he knows hip hop. He knows that world. And this is the way he chooses to express himself.
You're going to record with him?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to record.
What's his name?
His name's Justin Harrington. Amazing. Demeanor is his handle. But it's just like when you start crossing over into that generation and he's like, man, when I'm playing this stuff for my friends, they're like, what is that? That's amazing. And I'm like, exactly. It's like when people are exposed to this stuff, they're like, that's so cool. But getting there is the hurdle.
Rhiannon Francesco, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Rhiannon Giddens. We spoke in 2019. Giddens appears on Cowboy Carter, the record by Beyoncé that just came out. It explores the Black roots of country music. I'm David Remnick, and that's our program for today. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards. This episode was produced by Max Balton, Adam Howard, Kala Leah, David Krasnow, Jeffrey Masters, Louis Mitchell, Jared Paul, and Alicia Zuckerman, with guidance from Emily Botine and assistance from Michael May, David Gable, Alex Barish, Victor Guan, and Alejandra Deckett. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.